Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Hello and a very warm welcome. I'm Kainat Khurshid, your host for the day. In today's program, we will be discussing the role of adult education with regards to environment. In the studio from the Talking Eds team, we have Tony Mitchell and Ola Pavlo. Tony has a bachelor's degree in psychology with sociology and has a keen interest in environmental sustainability issues. And Ola has been working as a community educator and environmental sustainability practitioner in Scotland for several years. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Hello.
Our studio guest for today is Vincent Caruana, about whom I would like to say just a few words by way of an introduction before we move on. Vincent is currently a full-time lecturer at Malta's University Centre for Environmental Education and Research. He has been very active in the social and development NGO scene for the past 28 years, both locally and at a European level, having co-founded Malta's first fair trade organisation and Malta's Network for Development Organisations. Vincent is an established mentor and trainer of various civil society organizations and is also experienced in project management, monitoring, and evaluation. Last but not the least, he is also a member of the President's Foundation for the Well-being of Society. Welcome to Talking Eds, Vincent.
Hi, and thanks for the invite.
I would love to have your comments on the current global political climate with regards to environmental policies.
Well, the environment, I think, has been on the agenda seriously since the 70s and much more seriously since the 90s through the famous Agenda 21. So it is clear that it is in theory a priority. What is not clear is the political commitment towards this priority. So if we look at the changes in the past few years, for example, the support of the people that carry a lot of weight from a financial and from a political point of view has been changing. So the main countries did not sign the Kyoto Protocol. So that meant that the countries that are most responsible for emissions, not binding themselves to any real commitments. And there has been some push, especially under the Obama administration, to get some commitment. But now again, with the new changes, these commitments are being questioned again. So I think that we always need to look at the global climate from two points of view, the political commitment, but also from a civil society point of view, what are the implications? And this is where I am more interested as an environmental educator, because then the whole question of campaigning, the whole question of advocacy as part of our strategy as environmental educators becomes important.
I think what you said there, Vincent, then poses the question, do you feel that the leadership won't come from the politicians, that it has to happen at a community level?
What I feel is that irrespective of politicians, the community has a very important point and a very important role. So I think that the community will, of course, change its strategies according to the politics. But because my main work is about empowering communities, I think that communities are very much responsible to really analyze and understand the global shifts in thinking and where the power lies, and that will help communities to create their own strategies.
I agree. I think in an ideal world, we would have society where people can put pressure on politicians to make certain decisions. At the moment, there are certain political trends which are a little bit worrying, such as, I would say, political support for fracking. For whatever reason, things that have been happening in America with the Dakota pipeline, and all that is a bit worrying. But I think that actually maybe some of these things that are happening around the world are, in a way, causing people to rethink and focus on environmental issues.
I think this is the whole question that we're trying to raise, that for many years the dominant mind shift has been to do business as usual, while keeping the value of nature very low. So we aren't really challenging that many things might have benefits, but that the short-term benefits are often at the expense of our environment, and our environment is at the end our livelihood. So there is here a whole contradiction in the way that we've been thinking. And part of our work, I think, is really to revalue nature again and put it as a cross-cutting issue that will help us take decisions. Because at the end, there is this, we have it in Maltese, in my own language, but we have it in various, I think, languages that when we spit in the air, it comes back to our face.
Okay, that's quite a nice image. So I suppose that comes back to what we said. You talked about the short-term gains, or what people are more interested in, rather than thinking about the long-term consequences and the global economic system, or at least in the Western world. The discourse is that GDP growth, gross domestic produce, is the way forward. We want to increase GDP. That's the main focus. The environment seems to come second. So how do we counter that?
Of course, you brought up the point of growth. One of the most famous books was called Limits to Growth, actually. It came from the famous Club of Rome. And there's a reason, because the Worldwide Fund for Nature has actually calculated that if every person in the world had to live at the same standard of living as the average in the developed world, we need four worlds. So, of course, we need to look at where we're going, but also, is this model bringing us happiness? So when we challenge the GDP, we are also asking ourselves, is this bringing us happiness? Is this about our well-being? And who is us? Are we the privileged part of society, or is it something inclusive?
I come from a country in South Asia, and we are a majorly agrarian country. But over the past couple of years, we are facing annual flooding because of the soil erosion and the melting of ice caps. So every time in the summers, the rivers basically flood, and then the huge internal displacement of people along with loss of crops and everything. So for us, the global climate change is a big reality. But then again, all the industries from the West are slowly and gradually shifting towards the global South, as we may call it. And how can adult education, or specifically the environmental educators, how can we address this issue?
One of the main roles that we take in environmental education is first and foremost to understand our interconnectedness and to understand how our behavior is interlinked with the realities of so many other people. So when we are doing work with communities, even with children, so not only with adults, I'm saying the whole community, first and foremost we try to understand how in a globalized world we are interconnected. Then we do ask the question that whether my actual behavior is leading to the model which I believe in. So when we do some futures visioning, we try and consider alternative models. For example, World Trade System is one of the major issues that adult environmental education ought to be reflecting on. So when we talk about environment, sometimes we automatically go to biodiversity or marine environment, you know, but actually we've seen more and more civil society organizations where they start, traditionally environmental organizations, who say trade is our major issue. It might sound new, but it's not actually, because we need to start seeing the linkages, how trade is actually, trade as we know it today, one of the main causes of environmental degradation.
I definitely agree with that. The consumption in general is a big issue, because our world at the moment in a way revolves around consuming products, and the way how we produce those products is not sustainable. What we have been doing in Scotland a lot is working with communities, raising awareness on consumption and trying to bring focus to that. And also, as you have mentioned, Vincent, this interconnectedness, what we do in one country impacts people in another country. It's sometimes it's a difficult point to get across with people, that things you do actually affect other people. It may seem a little bit abstract sometimes, or not real. It's sometimes easy to deny things when, if you acknowledge them, it means that you have to change your lifestyle or change your beliefs. So what we have been doing a lot is bringing people from different communities to work together. I have been working specifically with minority ethnic communities, and what is really good with that is that different people from different countries will have experiences, and they actually bring their own experiences and their own faith to their stories. When they say that they have seen climate change in their own countries, then it's much more believable than when you see it on TV or in media.
All that's suggesting from a pedagogic point of view is very important. that through adult education initiatives, we actually create new spaces for people to come in contact with each other. People who have been made anonymous through the World Trade System now find a face again, and it is an opportunity then to share stories, to share realities, and to strategize together, to strategize across countries, across communities, across the globe, you know.
I mean, I wanted to go back a little bit to something that you mentioned earlier on there, Vincent, and it was, for some people, it's still contested, you know, environmental issues such as climate change. We know that the science is denied by some people, and coming from the UK, I know that in some sectors of the UK press, let's call them the reactionary element of the press, they speak as if, you know, there is no real scientific basis.
It is true that there are various narratives, and that some narratives are specifically designed to keep the status quo for the simple reason that, as we said, the status quo does bring benefits, but it does bring benefits to the select few, to those who have power. I think that if one looks at the United Nations reports from a scientific point of view, it is very clear what the science behind climate change is. But of course, it is not in the interest of everyone to change the means of production and consumption, which we were talking about. And there's always a backlash in the sense that one creates a backlash for the other. However, when it comes to alternative narratives, one of the issues that we found to be very successful is that you need to have some sense of achievement. So when we talk about environmental education, I think it's always important to have some successes, to celebrate those, to put the focus on them, and to use them as a springboard for further action. Otherwise, I think we will also become disillusioned. When we actually look at the challenges in front of us, it is so easy to say, like, so much bad is going on, I mean, I'll just give up and live my own life.
Well, and there are actually a lot of such initiatives happening right now. Even I have been observing a few different informal groups on Facebook that where people discuss their own solutions to climate change or trying to improve their own lifestyle to make themselves more sustainable. And it's amazing how much work gets done informally between people, how much information is being shared, and how much enthusiasm there actually is between people. And these are the solutions, because it is true that there's the problems that we're facing can seem too big to tackle, and that can cause helplessness and can be paralyzing. Where do I start? Does it even make a difference if I recycle my beer cans or anything like that? Shall I even bother? But if we start talking not about the problems but about solutions first, it can actually help people to start action and feel more hopeful and actually make a difference.
And actually, it's good that you mentioned the word solutions, because I keep on getting the question as if there is like one panacea, one solution. And actually, what is interesting in our work is the millions of solutions that different communities can come up with, which look so different from each other, but if taken together, they are mini contributions contextualizing something bigger. So I think that we need to actually think solutions and not think of a solution. I keep on getting this question when it comes to energy. Like, which is the best means of alternative energy, you know? Like, understand your context, understand your reality, and try and come out what works best for you in that particular context, in that particular circumstance. And I think if we start doing this, we really have a lot of opportunities. I mean, when it comes to food, for example, I think we are really questioning the means of production and consumption when it comes to food. And some people have a backyard, they can grow their own food, others have a roof and they can grow their own food, others can go and help in a permaculture initiative. I mean, we need to look at the endless possibilities, and they are actually endless. And the achievement of doing something. I know that the focus today is on adult education. One thing I noticed with adults is that we are so disconnected from food, that even as adults, when we do a workshop to introduce adults to planting a seed, some feel so, lack so much confidence, you know, of how to actually do it, because we've been disconnected. But once you do it, and you get your first mini success, the first radish that you grew yourself, you know, that again is a springboard for your next action.
Okay, at this point, I would like to take the opportunity to take a short break and gather our thoughts.
This is real talk. This is non-stop. It is loop now, tongue and mind, played off the sidewalk, straight to your boombox. How it travels from ear to memory. Well, this is medicine. There's a mass church within, and each will find it in their own time. Well, this is music. This is how I use it. It makes you move and move the movement. This is how I focus, knowing it's not hopeless. But it sure starts with me and ends on a whole note.
Welcome back. That was a beautiful piece of music. Coming back to our discussion, I would like to know a bit about Malta's context and how adult education is playing a role in raising environmental awareness.
In a way, Malta also reflects what is actually a global reality, that adult education has a low status and that adult environment education has an even lower status. So when you actually think of adult education in itself, there is a lot of flexibility, because being a non-formal system of education or an informal system of education, it isn't tied down to strict curricula as you find in schools, but it is also often an afterthought, you know? So I think that Malta reflects this global reality of adult education being more of a low status. Having said that, I think that there have been quite some interesting initiatives by non-governmental organizations, but not only. When you introduced me, you also mentioned that I'm a member, for example, of the President's Foundation for the Well-being of Society. So both through non-governmental organizations and through such foundations, we, for example, create new spaces for people to come together. We create new spaces for people who do not normally meet together to meet together. So just before, we were talking about food, we're talking about seeds. And it is quite normal that NGOs talk to themselves, farmers talk to themselves, shops that sell local food or shops that sell clean food talk to themselves, but not so much spaces actually exist to get people together and start a discourse. So one important role, I think, of adult environmental education in Malta is actually to get people together, because we all know that knowledge is actually created from getting people together. It's not something that exists. You know, the banking education that Paulo Freire used to talk so much about, it's not like you put in something in the mind and you take it out whenever you need to. It's actually created through the process of getting people together. So without entering into the whole debate, because for me it's a useless debate, formal education has its role, adult education has its role, and it's not one more important than the other, it's just different roles. But we all know that adults take important decisions that affect the rest of the planet. So I think, for example, the inclusion, which we referred to before, of policymakers as one of the new priority areas within environmental education is important, because it is an acknowledgement that taking decisions today is a complex reality, and the more we are educated about the general principles of sustainable development, the more important it is.
From the UK, as an outsider, it was really striking the level of development that was going on. It seems to be everywhere, and many of us complain about being woken up in the morning by the building work starting at 7 a.m, cranes all across the skyline. At what level does it actually become, there is an economic benefit, I'm sure, but at what level is that offset by the disruption or how sustainable is this level of development?
Exactly, and I think that the disconnection from nature sometimes makes us ignore these factors. Mm. So I think that one of the very important roles that educators are taking is actually rediscovering our connection with nature. It could be just going trekking, you know, because if a valley is going to be destroyed, but I've never been in that valley because I spent my time in front of a tablet, you know, I'm not going to really understand what's happening. But if it's a place which I identify with, because it's a place where I go for relaxation, then I can really understand what it means that this is under threat. So I think that reconnecting with nature, but in this wide sense, reconnecting with nature, touching the soil, going walking, open, and so on, will make me conscious of the negative impacts of development, apart from, of course, the potential economic benefit.
Having the luxury of the time to connect with nature is probably an issue for a lot of people as well. And this perhaps connects to social policy in terms of how much free time do people have, how much leisure time.
I think that Wolfgang Sachs from the Wuppertal Institute actually has linked environmental degradation with the fast pace of life.
Yes.
And unless we slow down to reflect, but I think actually education is about reflecting, it's about critical thinking. So we need to slow down to reflect, and I think education creates these spaces for reflexive thinking. Because in this fast world where we move through the motions without thinking, so much happens. But the moment you stop to reflect, then you can really have an alternative vision. One exercise that we used to do with our students was to look at the possible futures and then try and see whether these possible futures are probable. Yeah? Because when you look at the cranes you were talking at, you know which one of these possible futures are probable, but then you challenge them which are the preferable ones. And this creates a space to think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to add to that actually, you've mentioned before that everything is interconnected, and in a sense that's the same here, because we don't have much time to reflect or spend time in nature because we work so much, and we work so much because we need to pay for all the things that we are consuming, which we are often over-consuming. We're consuming much more and buying much more than we need. So it's all part of this bigger economy that we are running the treadmill. And if thinking of alternative futures, you know, if we were to slow down, we could actually have more spare time if we worked less, if we consumed less. It's a little bit utopian, but I think it's possible.
Some time ago, I had the opportunity to organize a workshop on decluttering our life. What was interesting was that we tried to change a bit the approach. Instead of saying, like, you should recycle, you should reuse, you know, like, we said, listen, how much stuff do I have in my house, you know? How much stuff do I have in my desk when I go and try to work? You know, I have to clear a space to... Will making myself lighter help me as a person? And when people stopped reflecting, they could make whole lists of things that they need to remove, you know, because we have amassed so much stuff in our life. And it's not helping us. It's not helping us as individuals. So we started from actually personal development. And then in the second half of the workshop, we asked the question, if there are things which we no longer need, how can we like dispose of them responsibly? How can we recreate the sharing economy? Until 2-3 months later, I kept on receiving messages like, we've done this decluttering, the list that we wrote, we managed to do. Because we managed to work, or we tried to work on the personal level, on personal growth, and on social responsibility together, you know?
But what we have been doing in Scotland quite a lot are swap shops, which are basically events where people can bring things they no longer need or they actually never needed and give them somebody else. Some communities we worked with were initially reluctant because there's idea of status when you're reusing somebody else's things, clothes, items. But we have managed to get over that quite nicely over the last year or so. And these events have been super popular. We've been having hundreds of people coming in, bringing in clothes and asking us to organize other events where they can share their other items, you know, unwanted gifts they got for Christmas. That's a really big thing. So there's a lot of items people have at home that they don't want, they don't make them happy, but they could make somebody else happy.
That was really interesting thing about swap shops, because the community I come from, we have large families, like huge, and everyone has got like so many kids and then so many cousins. And we have worn each other's clothes, and I think it's part of culture that you don't give away these things or throw away these things. You just like share them out in the bigger family, in the extended family. I think as far as Global South is concerned, there are a lot more things that can be integrated towards like a Western lifestyle. And there's something which can be learned from these communities when it comes to environment, because we have been closer to nature for a long period of time, and we live from the earth and we grow stuff because we have been an agrarian society for as long as I can remember. So I think adult educators can bring these experiences from these communities into Western discourse.
I think that coming from Europe, I realize that we are very Eurocentric. Some years ago, for example, I was involved in a civil society initiative on development, and we realized how much subconsciously we talk about exporting development, you know, as if we know what development is about and as if we want to export our model of development so that others follow, you know. At the same time, we also know that the reality of our model of development has caused more poverty in many areas and has created environmental degradation. So we don't have so much to show about our model of development because it's been successful in some areas, but it's also the root cause of a lot of poverty and environmental degradation. So we actually created an initiative where a number of people from each of the European Union countries visited Nicaragua in this case to try and understand indigenous models of development that were taking place in Nicaragua. I'm mentioning it just as an example, but the whole question of creating spaces for dialogue needs to also flow in different directions. So the whole concept of exporting development is faulty, and there's a lot to learn from the sharing of good practice. So actually in environmental education, one of the main methodologies is actually sharing of good practice. It is actually the contamination of the good practices of each other, a positive contamination, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's a really good point of contamination of good practice and what you've mentioned, Kainat, about this richness of knowledge that many communities have that would be good to bring into the table. I totally agree. This has been my experience, that the most effective ways of learning for us have been bringing a number of different people from different cultures around the table, cooking together and sharing knowledge about the ways that everyone knows they have worked for them for years, for centuries. And this has been a great, rich resource for us for learning, sharing knowledge. And that's the way how we learn from each other. That is the most contaminating, when you actually see the person that tells you that this works for me, you know.
That's where we'll have to wrap up our discussion for now. Here, I would like to leave you all with some food for thought by means of a quote from Mahatma Gandhi. Earth provides enough to satisfy every man's need, but not every man's greed. Thank you to our panel, Tony and Ola, for their valuable insights to our discussion. And thank you to our guest, Vincent Caruana, for joining us and sharing his expertise. And also thank you to our technician, Samuel. The Talking Ed series is available online at themaltauniversitybroadcasting.com. All that remains for me is to say thank you for listening and goodbye.